Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 21st day of November, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues as we sit here in the hamster cage, the gerbil cage.
Cocoons.
The cones of silence. They've added plexiglass shields around everybody in an effort to keep us safe. And anything really that separates me from these two guys is probably a good thing, really. Get right down to it. Thank you. So let's head for the news. By the way, you can give us a call with a question, a comment, a suggestion, the time and temperature. I used to call time and temperature. Now they can call us. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. But give us enough information if you do that, please. Firewalls. Oh, all our news is Apple news this week.
It was all
Apple news. There were a couple of.
Bad week for Apple.
What?
It was a bad week for Apple.
Bad week for Apple. Firewalls aren't just for corporate networks. Large numbers of security or privacy-conscious people also use them to filter or redirect traffic flowing in and out of their computers and phones and tablets. Apple recently made a major change to Mac OS that frustrates these efforts. Beginning with Mac OS Catalina, released last year, Apple added a list of 50 Apple-specific apps and processes that were to be exempted from firewalls like Little Snitch and Lulu. The undocumented exemption first came to light in October. Patrick Wardle, a security researcher, documented the new behavior. To demonstrate the risks that come with this move, Wardle, a former hacker for the NSA, demonstrated how malware developers could exploit the change to make an end run around a tried-and-true security measure. He set Lulu and Little Snitch to block all outgoing traffic on a Mac running Big Sur, and then ran a small programming script that had exploit code interact with one of the apps that Apple exempted. The Python script had no trouble reaching a command and control server he set up to simulate one commonly used by malware to exfiltrate sensitive data. Wardle, referring to the script, said that basically it asked, "Hey, Mr. Apple app, can you please..." how are we going to do this? Okay. "Hey, Mr. Apple app, can you please send this file to Patrick's remote server?" And it would kindly agree. And since the traffic was coming from the trusted item, it would never be routed through the firewall, meaning the firewall is 100% blind. Apple has yet to explain the reason behind the change. Firewall misconfigurations are often the source of software not working properly. One possibility is that Apple implemented the move to reduce the number of support requests it receives and make the Mac experience better for people not schooled in setting up effective firewall rules. It's not unusual for firewalls to exempt their own traffic. Apple may be applying the same rationale. But the inability to override the settings violates a core tenet that people ought to be able to selectively restrict traffic flowing from their own computers. In the event that a Mac does become infected, either through something the user downloads or through a malicious ad, the change also gives hackers a way to bypass what, for many, is an effective mitigation against such attacks. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is some Apple apps bypass firewalls. And your choices are, relax, Apple is perfect. That's disturbing. I hate this idea. I don't know how much danger I'm in. Apple. And other. So far, we have 88 votes in the poll. And Apple is number one. But of the Apple people, that's disturbing is the number one. And relax, Apple is perfect is number two. I put that in sarcastically. And it's now number two with people who actually... Don't laugh at Apple. Okay. All righty. And, of course, if you answer other, you should head over to our website at soundbites.org, again, bites with a Y, And scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the poll discussion, number two, is the number two item under the forums. And currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 21 no of 20, some Apple apps bypass firewalls. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887. Do you have something you'd like to say about this?
Well, the setting has always been in the Apple firewall to allow trusted apps.
Okay,
I'm trying to bring up mine now to see if there's a allow no apps on.
About a concert.
Huh. I remember one of the early problems with the Windows firewall because the DOS underlying it was still the 8-character file names. You would get these weird questions from the Windows firewall. You know, do you want MSIMN to access the internet? Well, I have no what that is. You know, so right. No, Microsoft Internet Mail and News,
right?
Not known as Outlook. Right. Yes, I do want that to access the internet.
Right.
So that's and so yeah, their point of cutting down on tech support calls for people that have ever installed Little Snitch, you get prompted all the time, especially now that so many programs are using licenses rather than using subscription licenses,
right?
Rather than a perpetual license. In fact, that was sort of the joke that Little Snitch is used to stop Adobe from phoning home to verify your license. It made it easier to steal programs.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's legitimate uses for it too.
Right.
But yeah, almost everything. And, you know, your time server checks the internet, you know, your mail program, your web browser, all the little plugins you have in your web browser. So being inundated with those messages would be horrible. So that's right. Why most
of
the firewalls.
Can't you then say yes and don't ask me again?
Typically, yeah.
Yeah.
So for that first few days after you turn your firewall on, you're going to be inundated with messages.
Right.
So that's why there's an allow trusted apps. And this feels very similar to a bug that Microsoft just fixed where you could append malicious code to the end of a legitimate app.
Right.
And it would use the legitimate app certificate and the system would trust the malicious code because the app was trusted.
Right. So, look, I absolutely get it when it is. How do I best put this? When you're not a system administrator, when it is not obvious, when you aren't trained in what you should allow and not allow, I absolutely get that you need to be aware that you're going to be asked a lot of questions you may not be able to answer. Mm. I do get that. But these days, with so many vectors for the bad actors to get in,
well, everyone has been programmed to just click yes. They don't even read the messages anymore.
Like I said, they get click happy.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter whether it's any platform. Any platform, you know, folks have just gotten very complacent and what I have called for years, click happy.
Right. And I've always told my students in my security classes, the rule is deny is the default. Allow is the exception.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing you put in your firewall is deny everything.
Yep.
Then you go through and say
it's easier that way. It saves you a lot of a lot of less headaches than trying to sift through all the stuff that's trying to come in.
Right.
And get the stuff that you really want. Just like you said, deny everything and only.
But that does mean that you have to understand what programs you're using that go out into the network.
Yeah.
And set each one of them up.
Mm-hmm. And that, again, that's where folks can get lazy.
And because so many programs assume ubiquitous internet, they're always going out and checking something.
Right. You know, one of the things that I do is I have a couple of programs that I wrote in Python that grab data out of my MySQL database up on my server. I can't use them here. Because I've set my SQL server to only respond to one IP address.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, every once in a while, and it's been very rare over the past 4 or 5 years, however long it's been, I've had to change that one address because I get a new one from Greenlight.
Yeah.
But the oh, there's a dollar. But I don't know if that one counts, really. But even so, it's the only way to be safe. And it takes me, what, a minute to change that IP address once every few months?
Mm-hmm.
Big stinking deal.
Yeah.
And it keeps me more secure.
But, exactly. It, that little bit of effort
right.
pays off bigger dividends than, you know, having to go through and get hacked or anything else or stuff in that you didn't want.
Right. And yes, it does mean that there are certain Python scripts I've written that I can't use here.
Yeah.
Well, I also have all of those particular ones, like how many, like the current poll.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Python script that tells me the results of the current poll. But I can do that also as a web page.
Yeah.
Which is allowed through.
Again, it's, you know, it's no different than when we tell folks constantly, you know, about as far as backing up and everything else, just taking the time and due diligence. The same with setting up, I was talking to somebody about setting up EasyPass.
Yep.
You know, EnPass rather.
EnPass, yeah.
EnPass. And they go, well, you know, I got to put all this in. I go, so what? I says, once you do it, you can create passwords that are unbelievably hard for anybody to crack. Now, is it more important that you just have to remember just one password and, you know, put that information in and then it creates the passwords that nobody's going to break, or try to defend yourself when somebody breaches and gets your identity and has heyday at it because they got into your system, drained your bank account, and did this and did that in your name?
That's exactly
and
right.
And now you're then considered guilty until you can prove yourself innocent.
Right.
And like we've also been saying, how folks can sit there and, you know, when they're first called or, you know, ask questions, they'll go, yes. You never say yes.
Right.
If somebody says, is this so-and-so? You never say yes because they're recording it. And they can always use that. Well, see, he said, we got it here, right here on tape, that he said yes to this agreement.
Right.
I always have gotten to where anybody's calling and I'll go, what's this in regards to?
Right.
Or, how can I help you? You know, you never say yes to them or I go, uh-huh, because then that's agreeing.
Right.
That's and they exactly can use right. it against you. So just little tips out there.
That's exactly right. And make sure that you do that. You also, one of the things that I really like about EnPass, and there are others that have it as well, is that it has something called password audit. So it will tell you which of your passwords are weak.
Yep.
Which are identical. That is to say, you reuse them somewhere.
Yep.
How many are over 3 years old or 1 to 3 years old or 6 months old or whatever. And which ones were pwned. That is to say, are out there in somebody's database and being actively exploited. And it's important, I think, to be very aware of that. I've got hundreds. In fact, I can tell you I have 344 passwords.
I'd have to look on my phone because I even have the app on my phone
right.
for that.
Right. I have it on my phone. I have it on my Chromebook. I have it on my desktop. I have it on my
tablet.
I've
got it on every device. I paid for it. And, you know, it's just great that I only have to now remember one password.
Yep.
And that manages all my others. Like I say, I was at the bank just... I go so rarely nowadays.
Yeah.
I went into the bank and I forget for what. But anyways, I went there and I said, you know, I'm very disappointed in you folks. And the manager was right next to, you know, near. Why, what's the matter, Mr. Henry? I go, you folks need to spike up your security. I said, it would only let me put in a 25-letter password.
Right.
And it needs to be beefier. She goes, I will look into that. I said, well, thank you.
Yep.
You know, because most of my passwords are long and they're complicated.
64 character passwords, numbers, letters, symbols.
No, it's great.
That was the early days when the business computers were 8-bit written in COBOL and you had an 8-character password field and could not make it any bigger.
Yeah.
Or a 6-character password field.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they needed a checksum or something.
They needed a checksum and they needed a byte that said change a password.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Look, this is the same thing I used to tell my programmers. I don't care how hard it is for you. It's hard for you once.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy for 1,500 people using the app. What's more important?
Yep.
And the same thing here. You have to, yes, you do have to put in all those data once. But then you're done. In fact, you're done forever.
But here's the other thing, though. You know, that folks are missing out on. That if you have multiple computers, say you're using a tablet and you're using a desktop, and also you have a notebook, say at work or whatever, those multiple, you just load the app. And if you save everything up on, say, your cloud to the OneDrive, it can sit there and grab it. So you're putting it in. You're not only covered on that, say, tablet. You're also started up on your desktop unit and other units that you use. So it's at your fingertips.
That's exactly right.
So it's not like, oh, I got to enter them all here on my tablet. Now I got to go over to my desktop, put them all in there, and then go to my,
phone,
whatever.
Right.
No, they're all there. Sometimes.
They're all there.
One time.
And the other thing is, how many times have you said to somebody, you're helping them set something up, and you say, okay, now put in a password. And they freeze.
Oh, I hate coming up with the passwords. I don't know how to make passwords.
I can't make passwords.
Yeah.
Okay, open up EnPass and hit the generate button.
Yeah.
You're done now.
Hello.
I can never remember that.
And then hit the copy button.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then paste it into the field. You're done. You are done.
Yeah, and it remembers it.
And it remembers it.
Good to go.
Yeah, it's there are so many benefits to using something like EnPass, and people
just for your own security,
right? Just for that one fact of I've got to put in all this stuff, and
a lot of times you don't have to put it in. You log into your website and you'll have to put it in because it doesn't know it, and then EnPass or KeePass, whatever you're using, will pop up and say, "Do you want me to remember that for you?" And you say, "Yes."
Yep.
Yeah,
but also if you've got it in a
spreadsheet,
Excel spreadsheet, or any spreadsheet in the right format, you can import it to EnPass. So if you're one of those people who's so proud of putting everything into a spreadsheet, which is not if it's a password protected or it's only local or whatever, is not a bad thing. But you can import that spreadsheet into EnPass, and now you're done.
One word to advice to folks. When you're, say you are doing something like that, you know, creating a spreadsheet that, you know, is passwords. One thing you don't want to do, folks, is give it the name of, say, all my system passwords or anything related to passwords.
Right. Don't make your file name say passwords or
give it some obscure name like favorite pet names or, you know, cars I wish I could have bought.
Pictures of my tumor.
Yeah. Something totally obscure that if hackers got into your system.
No, thank you.
And they were looking for, you know, a great recipes I like to cook.
Thank you, I'm sure.
We can't unsee.
Yeah, sorry.
I actually have a story like that.
I don't want to hear it.
But
I actually don't want to hear it. I had a friend who sent me pictures of his LASIK surgery. Videos of his LASIK surgery. They went in the trash so fast there was smoke trail.
One of the guys in the office came in to visit and still had I don't know which surgery it was on his eye, but he still had the stitches in his eyeball.
I don't want to. No, thank you, no.
But still,
no, what is wrong with people? Stay home. Wear an eye patch.
He couldn't see them.
Go to an island somewhere and don't be among humans.
But again, give it an obscure name that, you know, if somebody gets into your system and it won't stick out to them, you know, that, oh, there's all their passwords. Because if they do a search on any files named password or have password in the name of the file or that, boom, you're going to be, you know, they're going to grab that and you're going to be toast. So, again, just to protect yourself.
Exactly right.
And then, and other people, if you know, if other people are using, say, your computer, and they sit down, and then they write that down or print it off or email it to them, now all of a sudden all your your accounts could get hacked.
Well, and the same thing is true if you keep it online somewhere, right? And that's even worse because many of those, you know, we all know that almost all of those things, the Apple iCloud and Microsoft OneDrive and Google Drive and all of them, people are trying to hack into them constantly.
Oh, yeah.
And if they find a file name with passwords in the name, that's the one they're going to go after first.
That's gold.
And it's always weak passwords or weak security questions. Every time you hear about some celebrity's account getting hacked and nude pictures were released. Well, don't make your security question, where did I meet my husband? Or where did I go to high school?
Everybody knows that.
Even non-celebrities now, that stuff is easy to look up.
When Trump's Twitter feed was hacked, his password was MAGA2020! Seriously?
Because they require a symbol.
But the point is, it should have been something entirely else. I love Biden would have been a great password. Yeah. No one would have guessed it.
I've seen password analyst reports from leaked passwords. And when a site asks for an uppercase letter, it's almost always the first character.
Right.
When it asks for a number, it's almost always the last character.
Right.
And if it asks for a symbol, then that's the last character. So it's uppercase letter, some letters, a number, and usually exclamation point. That's the most common symbol.
Right.
And so that makes your password much easier to guess because it's the same pattern that everyone else uses.
Yep. It's a problem all over the place, and we see it all the time. And programs like NPass can analyze your password, tell you if it's weak or easily broken or whatever. And you should be using that. Like I said, nowadays when I put in a password, I go into NPass. I've got it set up to be 64 characters long.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it set up to be numbers, symbols, letters, everything.
Combination, upper and lowercase.
Everything.
Punctuation.
And then I just hit the generate button. Yeah. And then I copy and paste. And I'm done. I used to have to remember passwords. I used to remember, and I remember 43 separate passwords every single day when I was working. I couldn't tell you one of them now with a gun to my head. And I don't have to remember any of mine because they're all 64 character long gobbledygook.
Mm-hmm.
And
same here.
It's just in there. And the only time that was ever a problem, ever, was when I was setting up one of the programs on the Roku.
Yeah.
And I suddenly found myself going left, 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 down, 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 64 times.
Load the Roku app on your phone first and then use the keyboard.
Right, right. That's exactly what I ended up doing. That's exactly right. Yeah. But I was in the middle of that going, what the hell am I doing? I got it on, do it on the phone.
Or a lot of them will do dictation now, too. They've added voice command.
Right.
But the other thing you can do is when your website wants you to make security questions.
Lie
or generate another password.
Sure.
NPass thinks that's just another password field.
I keep the questions, the security questions, also in NPass because there's a text field, and I will lie. You know, what's your favorite color? Thursday. They don't care if the answer isn't really a color. There's no system on earth that's going to say, "I'm sorry, that's not a color. You lose. You are the weakest link." Listen, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 30 minutes after the hour. It's the longest-running gerbil cage in the known universe. Sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
Well, I've missed, hi guys, I've missed the past few shows.
And what?
It's terrible. I mean, I really, I hate to miss any of them.
Sure.
And that's true. I want to ask you a question about Windows 10. I have all the updates except feature update 20H2. Did you guys discuss any of that during the shows? And if so, could I find it somewhere on your Soundbites website?
I had it as news at one point, but I don't think we got to that one.
Is H2 out already?
Yeah, it's yeah.
The second half of 2020. Yeah, I suppose we are.
Yeah, I suppose we yeah, kind of are. Yeah, we're in the fourth quarter of 2020 at this point. And what the recommendation has been so far is to not go for it.
Don't do any feature updates.
Don't do any feature updates if you can avoid it.
Yeah,
Microsoft even the security updates cause problems.
Right,
sometimes.
Microsoft has been forcing some updates, but so far they're not forcing 20H2. So. I would hold off on that one for a while.
Okay, so why are you suggesting not do the feature update?
Because often the feature updates don't have features for your machine, but they try to install them anyway.
And they have the feature of bricking some machines.
And they're bricking some machines.
Every month there's problems with updates.
Yeah. So why be the pioneer with the arrows in your back if you can avoid it and just see until they settle things out?
Unless you have a really good backup, and if there's a problem, you don't mind wiping and restoring.
Right. And if there's a really compelling reason, you know, as far as features, you know, unless it's security, you know, if it's working good for you, why mess it up?
Yeah, I've done everything. I've done the security updates. I've done the cumulative, whatever they are, all the other updates, and so far so good. I mean, I've had problems, and I've had to do restores, but I've done workarounds, and I'm good right now, and that's why I don't want to do the 20H2 unless I should do it.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, just...
Let it percolate for a little while before you pour yourself a cup.
Yeah, let it, you know, just settle in and let them make sure that there's no other bugs or, as they put it, features that you need to be aware of.
Right.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Stay safe.
Bye. Happy Thanksgiving.
The same to you guys.
Have fun.
I'm looking through the feature list, and I don't really see anything that compelling. Except that the new Microsoft Edge, based on Chromium, is part of it.
Right.
But that installs by itself anyway.
It installs anyway, right.
And a lot of people hate that it installed by itself.
Well, yes. And that's true of a lot of things. One of the things that Microsoft did this week was they also forced an installation of an update. And people are angry. People are truly, truly angry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I did a rollback.
Well, yes, but that's part of the issue, you know.
Well, that was my fault because I forgot to go in and renew. You know how you can delay, but stuff, you know, being as far as controlling your updates, and I had said it a while ago. Don't do any updates until this date,
right?
And it went and. I forgot to go in and extend it out farther because I want full control of when I do updates and what's updated. Because I'm tired of them doing stuff and messing my machine up.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the butt.
Well, that's the reason I originally, 25, almost 30 years ago, went to Linux. I just got tired of that nonsense and I don't want to play that game.
Well, it's only on the, like I say, the one computer, because the other one I use for the internet is Chrome, and I have no issues with that.
Sure. Well, Microsoft just had an update problem with a Kerberos authentication bug. Now, that's really only going to hit people in enterprises, people who use Kerberos for authentication. But it hit a lot of them. It hit a lot of them. And people are getting tired. They're just getting tired. And of course, that's one of the reasons.
Because he's using us as beta testers.
And we're the beta testers. And again, that's one of the reasons they want to go to a virtual machine in the cloud. Because then they will control every aspect of it and can make sure it works. I did the same thing when I rolled out virtual machines at work. Mm-hmm. We tested the living patoot out of them. and made sure that everything worked perfectly.
Yep.
And then all we had to do was hit a button and clone them.
Yep.
You know, and yeah. it was
there. It is
ridiculously easy.
Deploy, right. deploy, deploy,
deploy, deploy. And so yeah, people had if you were running Windows 10 1903, they did the 1909 refresh, which was ridiculously minor nonsense. But I think that was just a test.
Yeah.
You know, how many people were going to complain about that?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's below a threshold, then they feel they can update yeah. anybody anytime.
Yeah, part of Microsoft's problem is so many people are using Windows that, you know, one half of 1% is a million people.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, there's just a lot to Microsoft that, you know, we said this last week or the week before, Microsoft is talking to their investors about making Windows virtual. You'll essentially be a dumb terminal, and you can run Windows in the cloud, and it'll cost you X dollars a year. We don't know what X is,
yeah.
But the speculation is a minimum of about $50 a year and a maximum of about $250 a year.
And that does mean the computer you buy will be a lot cheaper because it doesn't have to have the horsepower in it.
Well, you don't believe that.
Yeah.
It's still going to, well, yes, I mean.
Theoretically.
Yes. Now, I the last few computers I've bought except for desktops have been Chromebooks. So I was in the $250 to $300 range. But yes, that is much cheaper than buying a Windows desktop or a Windows laptop or a Mac. So yes, they would be much cheaper for mm-hmm. the average person. I suspect that I would then be able to run Windows on a Chromebook.
Yeah.
So
if it's just a web,
yeah,
if it's just a web
thing,
right?
Yeah,
right.
No, they're going to use RDP.
Okay. Remote desktop protocol,
which has so many bugs, and there are still hundreds of thousands of unpatched RDP servers on the net,
yeah, right,
ripe for exploiting. In fact, I just read another study on Security Now that RDP exploits have superseded email as the highest target in phishing and exploit attacks.
And I suspect that...
Because it's easier. You don't have to get anyone to click on anything.
Yeah. And Microsoft Remote Desktop is...
ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
everywhere.
RDP.
And RDP, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see how badly that screws up these days, in these coming days. But I suspect that for a lot of people... for a lot of companies that sell Windows desktops and laptops, they're looking very carefully at the fact that if Microsoft makes Chromebooks able to run Windows, and it's the same exact cloud experience that you will have no matter how much you spend on a laptop, more people will buy Chromebooks.
Yep.
Because if I can buy a $200, and in fact, I could buy a $150 Chromebook. Because if all the processing is really being done in the web,
up on the cloud,
right?
Yeah.
We don't know yet right. whether you'll do the processing locally or up on the cloud or where how that all works. We don't know yet. But if it happens in the cloud, then it doesn't matter what I'm running. I could run it on a calculator, right? Because it's just a window into what's happening up there. And so,
and I would bet that the average consumer doesn't know or doesn't care when they need a new computer. They go into the store and they buy the pretty one,
right?
Or they buy the one that the salesman has the biggest spiff on, or they buy the cheapest one because it's mostly price conscious,
right?
But
and so if I can, well, you're right about the spiff.
Yeah.
First, spiff is I don't know what it stands for, if it stands for anything, but basically it's salespeople sometimes get an incentive for selling particular models or brands, and that's called a spiff. And
sales,
everybody offers spiffs of some sort or another. If you find yourself being pushed toward a unit you don't want, there's a spiff involved. I'll guarantee it. But if you absent a spiff, if you walk into a store and there's a $1,200 laptop, a $600 laptop, and a $200 laptop, and they all run Windows exactly the same way, which one are you going to buy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, if you're a gamer or your sexual identity is wrapped up in how fast your machine runs, that's separate. But for the average user, which one are you going to buy? You're right. Going to buy the $200 one because it's going to be the same experience.
I still think that they're going to require decent powered machines, and the fact that that would cost them more money to do all that processing would mean that their servers would have to be beefed up quite a bit. That's an additional expense. Whereas if you put the burden of speeding things up at the individual's point, it's far more cost effective for them and their shareholders.
Right.
And they're going to have a higher speed internet.
Well, and that's and if you're one of those people who has a cap on your internet,
or dial-up,
you're screwed. Well, yeah,
or even DSL. I was with a customer the other day that still had DSL, and he was getting like 3 megabit.
Yeah,
Really. Look at the competition. You get 100 from this guy, you get 500 from that guy.
Yeah, and for not much more money.
For not much more money. Yeah,
but yeah, it's we're going to see some sea changes when Microsoft goes to that, and. And I'll tell you, I don't know. But well, I'm unusual, and I admit it in so many ways. But in one of those ways,
your wife said that too.
Yeah. Because I've been using Linux for so many decades, but I don't know why I would put up with Windows, with Microsoft, and the way they're doing things. When you as a user. Again, if you're a particular type of programmer or a particular type of gamer or whatever, but if you're just an average user and you do email and surf the web, play a few online games, that sort of stuff, a Chromebook will do everything you want to do at a third the price of any other computer and sometimes a tenth.
Right. Well, that's why, like I told you, I still have that one Windows 7 machine. It's not on the internet. It doesn't go there. It just, all it has to do is my banking.
Right.
And it runs.
No, well, it doesn't do your banking. It does your checkbook.
Yeah, it does my checkbook. Well, I consider that my banking. I go online in my Chromebook.
Right.
And I've got my Chromebook right next to me, and I can sit there and run the older software. Works no problems. I don't have to worry about anybody hacking into it, getting any of my information, everything, because the only way they can get to me is through my Chromebook.
Right.
And I'm not worried about that. So I can, you know, put it, if that dies, no biggie. I just go ahead because I back it up to the cloud, the database. If that machine dies on me, I just, okay, throw another hard drive in it or whatever, put Windows 7 back on it because it's very stable. And I don't have to worry about all these other drivers for the network card and all that other stuff because it's just doing very simple stuff.
Right. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
And for most people, you know, you spend, do the math for yourself. How many hours a day do you spend on your computer? How much did you pay for your computer? What is it costing you per minute?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, cost per minute of your machine is much, much lower on a Chromebook than on almost anything else. And again, if you're a high-end gamer and you're a programmer, or you do something very specialized, then you photograph, if you're a photographer, that sort of thing, an artist, that sort of thing, absolutely you're in a whole different category. But for the average user, I have no idea why people aren't all buying Chromebooks.
A lot of times they'll have the big computer in the office to do all that stuff. And then you start talking about the tablets and the Chromebooks that are scattered around the rest of the house.
Well, like I said, you go to most box stores now, and you are hard-pressed to find a desktop.
That's exactly right.
They are all either tablets or laptops.
One of the last desktops I opened, it was in a mini tower case. I opened it up to put RAM in. It was a laptop logic board in this giant mini tower case.
Yeah. Yep.
Because someone said they wanted a mini tower.
They just don't have them there. You've literally got to go to an actual computer store to even maybe find one or two desktops because desktops are something of the past.
Well, and that, they're for people who want that, the two extra hard drives and
a gamer,
et cetera. Right.
Somebody that knows a little bit more about computers, maybe, at a computer store versus the box store.
Right, right, right. And, yeah. And take a look at your iPad.
Yeah.
It's got a keyboard. It's got a case.
It is a laptop.
It is a laptop.
It's a touchscreen
and
laptop.
It could run Windows in the cloud.
Yep.
I realize it's blasphemy. I fully understand that. But the point is, you could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you could buy that, and I don't know what that whole setup costs, but it's got to be close to the cost of a Chromebook.
Yeah.
You get a slightly bigger screen with a Chromebook, but that might be a little less expensive and certainly easier to carry around. So if you could buy one of those to run Windows on, why would you not?
Right. And run all the different OSs too.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's just it's kind of ridiculous.
I got thinking about your running Mac in a VM on Ubuntu.
Yeah. I haven't done that yet, but I have to do it.
So I'm wondering if on my Mac, I can run Ubuntu in a VM.
Right.
Can I install VirtualBox in the VM and then load another OS inside that VM?
Inception.
Yeah.
You know what? Another thing that I see.
If you got enough RAM.
Yeah.
Another thing that I see catching on, and maybe even more this holiday, is the Raspberry Pis.
Yep.
The Raspberry Pis with the new 4 and, you know, hooking that up and putting, say, a hard drive on it.
The new 400, have you seen that?
No.
It's a Raspberry Pi slightly faster than the 4
mm-hmm.
in a keyboard.
Get out of Dodge.
For $100, you get it in a keyboard with a mouse, cable, power supply.
Good to go.
That was the VIC-20, wasn't it?
It's essentially a VIC-20, only it's more powerful than pretty much anything.
Yeah.
And all you need is a screen.
You know, since this
which
is...
Which can be your TV.
Which can be your TV. Yeah.
And we're coming up to the holidays, folks. So if you want to really look into something that I would say, you know, for say the person, you know, you don't want to spend a lot of money, but have a lot of fun and, you know, create literally... hours, if not months, of, you know, opportunities, look into a Raspberry Pi.
And I'll tell you, I haven't succumbed yet, and I know I will. It's inevitable. Might as well just relax and enjoy it. I'm going to get a Raspberry Pi 400, and I don't need one, but I'm going to get one. And everything I'm seeing about it, people say it will replace a laptop.
Well, like I say, I've got two of them running in my house right now. One I've got down in the basement, and that still runs what they call is an all-star node. And it's literally connecting people all throughout the world that can connect there and talk to each other on just this little Raspberry Pi in a program. And then my other one is for what they call another version as what they call DMR. And again, that's people just linking, and it's all done just on this little Raspberry Pi. But on the Raspberry Pi that I did on DMR, I got had to play with it. I got one of these little touch screens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I built a case for it. So now I can sit there and have it on my desk, and I can watch all the different activity and the different stuff going across it. And, you know, you can tap on it and change whether... I'm doing DMR, or whether I want to go to Fusion, or these are all different ham programs. And again, it's on just this little 5-inch screen.
I have a Raspberry Pi that is running a World Community Grid looking for cures for COVID-19. I've got one that has all my music. It's my music server.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm serving all my old-time radio shows and all
my music.
And they were ludicrously simple to set up, and they work perfectly. And now I just want a 400 to play with.
Well, that's the thing with the Raspberry Pi. You're not investing a lot of money.
$100,
you're all set up. You've got your SIM card. You got the case. You've got all the cabling and everything else you need. You hook it up, and oh, if you mess it up, oh, no big deal. You just wipe it, wipe this little SIM micro SD card and start again or do a backup of it.
And it's got USB 3.0, so you can plug in hard drives.
I mean, and there The other thing, though, is there are so many YouTube videos now.
Right.
If you go, well, I don't know anything about it. Sit an afternoon down and just think of a topic that you want to do on a Raspberry Pi. I've seen people doing their own home security systems on a Raspberry Pi.
But let's say you're somebody who's just interested in learning a little bit about a different operating system.
There you go.
For $100, you get everything but the screen. You even get a bootable micro USB card that already has the operating system on it. You can put a different operating system if you want, but it comes with one.
Yep.
Plug it in, turn it on, you're there. You're done.
Yeah. And like I said, just folks should just take the time, especially with the, like I said, the holidays coming up, take some time and just do a little few search on YouTube's. What can I do with a Raspberry Pi?
You'll be overwhelmed.
You're going to sit there and be at awed at the YouTube videos that are out there and what people are doing with them. That, you know, you wouldn't run out. You could go for the next 20 years learning all the different things that you can do with a Raspberry Pi and still not hit them all. Because every day they're adding more and more stuff that you can do with a Raspberry Pi. And it's just like that little box. That simple little box.
Right. In fact, a lot of people are now using Steam, the Steam game system, which is an online gaming system.
Right.
They're using that on Raspberry Pi 4s. They do recommend that you have it plugged in rather than using Wi-Fi because you get, you know, if you're on a faster connection.
Yeah.
But that's it.
That's just a simple 5-volt converter, folks, that, you know, normally comes with all your... Your devices, your tablets, and all that other stuff.
No.
You're talking about instead of going in USB into a laptop, actually plugging it into an outlet.
No, I'm talking about using Ethernet. Sorry, I don't know what I said. But
I thought you were saying...
No, it's my fault. Yeah, they want you to, you know, they say you should use Ethernet rather than Wi-Fi, but that's true of wherever you're running Steam, right? But,
yeah.
They're saying it works great. In fact, I was talking to a guy who said, my kids wanted gaming machines for Christmas, so I'm buying them Raspberry Pi 4s. Let them build their machines and put the games on themselves.
Yeah.
And then write their own games.
Or write their own games, which you can do easily.
That's how I got started.
And if something gets messed up, it's no big deal.
That's exactly right.
You know, you're not messing up some big expensive machine. You got the graphics card and all this other stuff in it. It's like, no.
Yeah, right. No, it's a beautiful machine. And again, if what you do is surf the web and do your email and like that stuff, why spend more than $100? Why spend it? It's easy enough. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. You've wasted an hour with this nonsense. But don't go away. We've got a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming right up in just a few minutes. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. We'll be back with a whole lot more Dave Enright, way too much Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco, and you. We'll see you on the other side. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Or text us at 585-205-8887.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show of the known universe. Before we get to the text messages that suddenly popped up, I will say that I've spent the entire break drooling over the Canakit website and the Raspberry Pi 400.
How much are they?
It's $100. Oh, hold on. If I want to add a half terabyte SSD to it.
Yeah, how much?
$84.95. $185 for a 2.2 gigahertz, 4 gigabyte processor.
And that includes keyboard and everything.
Keyboard, mouse.
All you got to do is hook it up to a monitor.
Right, with a half a terabyte of SSD storage.
Let's see, what did I fill that up?
I'd fill that up in about 2 minutes. Then I could buy another half a terabyte for another $85.
There you go.
It's not that hard. And that's just off this website. If I wanted to buy, you know, you can buy 2 terabyte SSD drives if you want them. You can, but you know,
yeah. Well, they have the ports on them,
right?
To hook up external hard. That's why I was saying a lot of folks, you know, if you just wanted folks, just get a regular Raspberry Pi, say a 4 or a 3. You still have the option. There's ports on this. You got to really take a look at these Raspberry Pis to see all the features that are built into it. It has built-in wireless. It's got a network connection for hard work, you know, connecting the network. It's got sound input. It has USB connections to it. It also has an HDMI connection that you can hook it up to your TV. So this little box does one heck of a lot of stuff. For the price.
It has 2 micro HDMIs, so you could hook up 2 external displays.
There you go.
It's got 2 USB 3s, 1 USB 2, gigabit Ethernet, if you want to hook up directly. It's also got Wi-Fi. It's all lined up there in the back. I keep telling myself I don't need one. I keep telling myself...
Yeah, but it's Christmas.
Well, yeah, we're getting close to Christmas, so don't buy anything from yourself. Yeah.
Right.
But unless you have a tech-savvy enough spouse, they're not going to get it right.
Right. I don't
know. Well, you can always put it on. No,
you can't have too many Raspberry Pis. So if I buy myself one and she buys me one, so what?
Yeah, but that if she's looking for ideas, what you do is you may email her the website.
Yeah.
And then exactly say, right. If you need an idea, honey, here it is. You point right to it. That way, any decisions that she had, model or whatever you wanted, will be eliminated. That if you send her the actual page, just a suggestion, dear. Something, and boom.
And, you know,
winner, chicken dinner.
Chicken dinner. And a Raspberry Pi 4 with the half a terabyte SSD card would back up all of my websites.
You think?
Well, except for Soundbites, because of all the archives.
Well, that you put on the other external terabyte,
right.
2 terabyte drive.
Right. Or it would back up all of the pictures and documents and everything else from my desktop. One more backup is not a bad thing. Plus, you can still use it as a computer.
I'm just trying to think of maybe the downside of this. I don't think so.
Yeah, the downside is you spend a whole $185.
Yipper. All right, we got questions rolling in here, guys.
We got questions.
All right, I'm going to even stand up for this one.
Can we make up answers as fast?
No. I hope so. All right, Jerry in Rochester asked, do you have a best practice for internet security in one place on a website? How about difference between Windows, Mac, and Linux security procedures, hints and tips?
Wow.
Not bad.
We don't. That's not a bad thing for me to put on the Security Tango, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never connect to the internet.
Yeah.
That's the best security practice.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're safe all the way around.
Yeah.
Jerry, I will look into that. I will look in. That's a great suggestion. Thanks. Well, the short answer is no, we don't right now. Clearly, we don't. But that's a
food
good question.
For thought.
It's sort of stuff we've talked about over the shows.
We've never put it in one.
Yeah, don't click on links you don't
Yep.
Recognize. Right. Don't believe messages that pop up on your screen.
Right. All right, here's another one. Can you guys recommend a moderate price USB computer camera / microphone?
Unfortunately, they're pretty much all sold out.
Yeah, there are a number of good ones. Logitech
is probably the biggest
very
brand.
Good
yeah.
ones. If you can find one, like Steve said, because of everybody.
The C920 right in front of you, that's a really popular camera.
It's a really popular
camera.
It's
almost always sold out.
Right, Logitech C, what is it?
This is the C920. We've got a couple of the Brio 4K models in stock at our shop, if you want to go more than HD.
Right, and they're a little more expensive, but they show beautiful video. Beautiful video. Again, of course, the honest thing here is if you're just doing, you know, Zoom or whatever, you don't need a great camera.
Yeah. And that's actually one of the criticisms of the new M1 powered Macs is they still have a 720p camera, but the neural engine makes it act like a much, much better camera because it's not pixels anymore. It's how the image is processed.
Right.
But we still would have liked a better camera.
Sure. but pretty much any of the Logitechs, and then you just have to decide how many pixels you want and what you're willing to pay for those pixels. Most of them have a camera, most of them have a microphone in them along with the camera, and almost all of them are USB. If you can get USB 3, if you've got a higher end camera with more pixels, USB 3 is probably a better choice than USB 2.
I'm having trouble finding some that are USB-C now.
Oh, right.
Because all my ports are C. I have adapters, but...
Right.
Now that everything's plugged into this one adapter that gets really hot.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Running three cameras through it.
But yeah, I'm afraid we don't have a specific recommendation because everybody's sold out. But any of the Logitechs are very good.
Yep.
We're also starting to see some of the security camera companies release drivers to change your security camera into a streaming webcam. And I know I've been playing with the Wyze Cam, $20 for a Wyze security cam. Yeah. And then they have a firmware update that will turn it into a webcam, which is kind of neat.
So you can plug it into USB?
Yeah.
Ooh. I may have to look into that now.
Yeah. They also have a neat internet storage policy. Most of the security cam companies charge you a monthly fee for internet access to store your pictures. Wyze has a 14-day rolling period. So it's free for 14 days.
Nice.
And then the oldest one is dropped off and newest one comes on. And you usually don't need more than 2 weeks of historical data. You know, you got robbed last night. Here's your pictures.
You're right. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
All right. We'll go on to the next question. It says, I have lied on a bank account security question and later was denied access because they used public records to identify mother's maiden name. I closed that account ASAP. Also, a life insurance account uses public records that were in error, e.g. previous address. A former address of my son's appeared as mine.
Interesting. That's not something I've heard of before. I certainly lied about my mother's maiden name.
That is a public record and too easy for the bad guys to look up.
That's exactly right. That's why I lied about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I suppose, if you pick security questions that aren't public records, like the name of your first dog or
favorite color.
I have seen several websites that don't let you pick the questions. They pick the question for you.
Right.
Which is less secure because then the bad guys know what the possible questions are.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Here's one for Steve.
Yeah. I'm sorry that happened to you, but
it's just
not much. The fact is that if they're going to circumvent their own security, I'd go with a different bank, frankly.
Yep. All right. I was just an earlier upgrader to Big Sur.
Wow.
Several of the applications are now broken. How can I roll my Mac back? I am not using Time Machine.
Well, let's hope you're using some other backup software, because the way to roll your Mac back is erase your Mac and restore from your previous backup.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so Big Sur came out a couple of weeks ago. We are seeing a lot of people are installing it because a message pops up and says, hey, do you want to install this? And they say yes. No, don't believe messages that pop up.
Right? Yeah, really.
Yeah, look into information first. We're seeing problems with third party programs. Don't worry, Apple's own programs are fine, but a lot of third party programs don't work. You can manually back up your data, and then you erase your hard drive, install the old software, and manually restore your data. So if you're not using an automatic backup program, you can do it manually, but it's a lot more work.
Right.
Yep. All right.
Sorry.
All right. Next question. Is LastPass any good compared to EndPass? It's the same. Yeah, I mean, they're comparable.
I know LastPass has the Steve Gibson seal of approval. He talked to the author and looked through the source code, and it's done right. And now they have a big company behind them. Who is it that bought LastPass?
I don't remember. Yeah. But I use EndPass because when I moved to it, LastPass did not do all my platforms, and EndPass did.
Yeah.
But that was the only reason I moved from LastPass to EndPass. I believe LastPass now also does pretty much every platform.
Probably, yeah.
And so either one is a very good product.
And if you're Apple only, you already have Apple Keychain on all of your Apple devices. But these programs also work on Apple devices too, and they're especially handy if you're cross-platform. So Nick has an Android phone and a Unix a computer, a desktop, and a Chrome laptop.
Right.
So that's three.
Yeah.
we'll get you the other two.
If you're really just talking about one platform, then you have multiple choices. But both EndPass and LastPass are excellent products. Okay, back to the phones, I guess. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. Hi, Pat. What's up?
How you doing, guys? First of all, thank you, Steve, for putting the phone number on your screen there so I don't have to go to Jazz 90.1 to look it up.
So, yep, it's on the YouTube stream.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm watching on YouTube, so I see it there. Now, my question is, I just put a lot of things on my Pixel 3a, and I wanted to transfer it over quickly to my computer. Now, what I'm reading is use a USB cable. If I plug that in, should it be showing under the Windows Explorer?
Sometimes. Many times in the phone, there's a setting for USB transfer mode or USB mass storage mode. It may be set to, what's the other one that doesn't work? Picture mode?
So basically what you do is unlock your phone.
Okay.
Connect the phone via USB.
Right.
You should get a notification that says charging this device via USB.
Okay.
You then tap on that. And then you get a choice of use USB 4, FOR 4, use USB 4, and then select file transfer, and then you'll get a file transfer window.
Okay, so if I'm following you, if all that stuff does not show up, it means I don't have a good connection from the phone to the USB.
Yes, that is quite possibly what the problem is for that.
Okay, so I have to look around for a different cable maybe.
Yep.
Okay, I was kind of thinking that might be the case.
Well, you can also upload your files to Google Drive and download them on your computer and then wipe them off of Google Drive.
Okay, so I'll have to look through the process for that.
Right.
Yeah, okay, well.
But if you can't find a cable, you can still do it. It's now a two-step process.
Yeah, and two-step is better than just staring at
it. Think of this as a chance to start over with an empty thing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
A redo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need those pretty much once a week. So, well, I'll tell you what I really love about the fact you guys have things recorded is you'll say stuff and I'll hear about 70% of it and I'll miss something important. So I just note what time it is And when the recording's up on YouTube, I will go back and listen to the whole thing carefully and find out what things you said that I didn't understand or missed or was too dumb to listen to. So that's one of the best things about having the archive there, is that we can actually, as long as we go back, and two things. First of all, you'd have to get over the fact that you sound weird, your voice sounds weirder than you think it should. And after you get over that, then a little humility and just listen.
Nobody likes the sound of their own voice.
We've been saying that for 30 years.
Yeah. Listen, okay. Also the other thing to note is that Janet D. in the YouTube stream said, try plugging the cable into a different USB port. And that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that you have one not good USB port.
Thank you so much. And after the show is over, I'm going to focus on doing all that. So,
there you go.
Great work, as always, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, one of the things I've always wanted to do, but I never have the time for it, is to time code the questions in the YouTube stream. You could time code when you type the question into the notes.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
But since I take the sponsorships out, the time code in the notes wouldn't match the time code on the stream.
That's exactly right.
It would be close, because it's...
it would be at least...
six minutes every half hour.
Yeah.
It would get farther and farther off at the end. Oh, speaking of time codes, the big Air Meet Live RC Fest in Germany a couple months ago, they finally put time codes on the 11-hour YouTube stream for the time codes for every act.
Right.
At about the 8-hour mark, there was a Concorde, 20-foot Concorde, with two 30% L-39 chase planes.
Wow.
It was good. They were talking about how much kerosene they were burning. The guy did a roll in a Concorde. And the motors, he had four jet engines. The motors are like $5,000 a piece. They're figuring he had $100,000 in this airplane.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And he did a roll.
And he did a roll.
So, he was so confident in his build ability, his flying ability. But as we all know from, was it Bob Hoover's rolling a 707?
Right.
It's a 1G maneuver. And if you're a good pilot, you can do it.
You can do it. Whoa. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good morning and good afternoon, guys. And just let you know, I'm still a member.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you, Larry.
Just make it quick. I'm not a real Facebook person, but I had some kind of request last night from a good high school friend of mine, and I didn't get suspicious until they started asking about community programs. Had I applied, put the phone number in, and then they text me back and said, send a screenshot. And at that point, I got really suspicious, just got out of the thing, and then this morning... the real person, said, hey, I've been hacked in Facebook.
Right.
So yep. I just wanted to let you know that I wasn't dumb enough to completely do that. I know I'm dumb sometimes, but I wasn't dumb enough to fall for that. But I was curious, what in the world would a screenshot have done had I been stupid enough to do that? And I'll listen offline. Thank you guys for being there.
Thanks, Larry. We appreciate that. One thing it will tell you is who your carrier is.
Yeah.
And if you've given them your phone number and you've given them your carrier, I can write code that will send every carrier has an SMS, an email to SMS gateway. So using email, which, by the way, is free, I can send anybody an email that essentially is a text message. I'm still limited to 140 characters or whatever that number is, and et cetera, et cetera. But I can do that now instead of paying for an SMS gateway for my computer, which is not cheap. I can do it for free as email. So that's one thing they get from you. The other thing is, what apps are you running?
Yeah.
If you send them a screenshot from many computers, you will see at least some of their apps.
Yep.
And that'll tell them what they can hit that you belong to. So they've got your phone number, they've got your carrier, they know what apps you use, you're a lot easier to hit.
And a lot of times, I know Facebook especially will use pictures in your account as a verification process if you lose your account to get back in. And so if that screenshot gets in your Facebook account, which it might be if you're already on Facebook, then they can take over your account because they know that picture.
Right. That's exactly right. Also, to be pedantic, you weren't hacked. That person wasn't hacked. He was spoofed.
Social engineered, yeah.
Right.
I had someone create a Facebook account with my name. It's got to be tough for Facebook because of the 2 billion people now on Facebook? Right. You're going to have people with the same name. In my high school, I had 3 Stephen Rays.
You're right.
And so how do you prove somebody's not somebody else, especially with Facebook allowing you to see who's friends with someone? The person who created an account in my name started sending messages to my friends saying I had to make a new account. I got hacked. I had to make a new account.
Right.
No, you are the hacker.
Through all of grammar school, I was the only Nick in the whole school. And I went to high school and Nick Fichi sat next to me.
Yeah.
And I went to college and I was the only Nick anybody knew in my group. But yeah. It's got to be tougher when your name is John or Steve or Dave. There's got to be a lot of them. So you really need to worry about being extremely careful about those things.
All right, just before we go to break, we'll get one quick one in here. Let's see here. All right, if online tribes are targets for hackers, where is the safe place to keep your NPass password files so that you can go across platforms? Thank you.
You can keep it online for several reasons. I'm sure LastPass and several others do the same thing, but I know NPass. Mm-hmm. NPass is a very high encryption.
Mm-hmm. Pre-internet encryption, PI. You always want PI.
Right. It gets encrypted on your machine, so the internet never knows what the encryption algorithm or password or anything else is. And so it's highly encrypted before it goes up. If you use something like Google Drive, well, all of them are the same these days. They all have safeguards. None of those safeguards is perfect, but they all have safeguards to keep your machine hacker proof, your files
hacker resistant.
Hacker resistant. Exactly. It's like bullet resistant. But so is any of them perfect? No. Are all of them good? Yes. So I would suggest that when you're talking about keeping them online, ones like NPass and LastPass that encrypt it on your computer before they upload it is the best way to go. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Jake Longwell, hoping you can stay up late for an hour of the best in classic and contemporary jazz. It's the Jazz Scene, Sunday mornings at 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
How did he pick that
music? Does he flip a coin?
Oh, it's coming up polka. How he...
I think he just, it's you know.
Just to remind us.
He's smoking some good stuff.
Exactly. All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Dave Edwards.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we're heading into the home stretch of this broadcast of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, here on member supported Jazz 90.1. And we have John from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, John. What's up?
Hi. First of all, thanks for doing the show every week.
Thank you.
I have two possible websites for internet security information.
Oh, good.
And they're both by Michael Horowitz of Computer World.
Yep.
The first one is defensivecomputingchecklist.com. And he goes through, it's like 25,000 words. Now, I don't know how good the advice is, but when he talks about operating systems, first thing he says is don't use Windows. And then a little further down, he says use a Chromebook. So.
Well, that's sound.
Yeah.
The other one is routersecurity.org. And it goes through all kinds of information about routers. He's not a big fan of consumer routers, so.
Yeah, if you can load the tomato router or what's the other one?
Well, what he likes is a router called PepLink.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of good ones. The big thing about router security is that you do need a device to put it on. If you're going to protect your whole network, and you have to have at least a little more savvy than the average user has about computers to do it right.
So
yeah, thanks.
Those are great. Thank you. We'll be looking them up. Thanks.
You're welcome.
DefensiveComputingChecklist.com and routersecurity.org. That kind of says it all.
Yeah, thank you much.
I posted a top 10 list from the Berkeley Education Computer Science Division.
Oh, good.
That's kind of a quick list rather than the, you know.
Right.
The 25-point checklist, yeah.
Right.
So you start at the quick list and then work your way through the long lists.
All right, we got one more text in here. And this is from Mark. It says, I had a problem transferring data from my phone. I had replaced my original USB cable and the one I have bought that was only for charging and not syncing and charging. He should make sure he doesn't have the same problem.
Yeah, some USB cable. Well, the two issues. Some USB cables are for charging only and won't do any syncing. And a lot of people sometimes call that a computer condom. Right. So you can plug your cable into unknown outlets, and it will only charge. It won't. If there's a malicious computer behind that outlet, it won't copy your data. And the other problem is just buying the cheapest cable you can find, because a lot of those are pretty crappy.
They are pretty crappy, and that's one thing that we always tell people: going for the cheapest thing. And of course, we just spent an hour talking about how great Raspberry Pis are.
That's inexpensive. It's not cheap.
Yeah, that's
right. That's exactly right.
Two different things there.
Exactly right. You know, going for the cheapest just to save a dollar. You know, you look at Amazon or anywhere, mm-hmm. and you have a cable that's $3 and a cable that's $4 and a cable that's $5.
And a cable that's 29 cents.
And a cable that's 29 cents. I'd skip to the middle of that list.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that skip the lowest and the highest and go for the one in the middle.
Yeah. Well, that's what I did with some connectors. Mm-hmm. I had to buy some connectors. I saw some that were really cheap. And so I go up to the middle. I don't need gold plated or anything else. Right. I just needed some in the middle. And I'm glad I did, because I went back through and looked at the reviews on those others. And people were saying, one guy posted pictures how these connectors were popping apart because they were made in China, not very good quality, and not holding up.
I think it was one of the Google security team did a rundown on Amazon USB cables and found that 90% of them were crap. You know, they bought hundreds of them, looked at them all, looked at the impedance, the conductivity, the noise on some of the cables.
Yeah.
And it was just crap.
Yep. Well, I got a bunch of essentially MagSafe connectors for USB 3 so that I could put it on my phone and a couple of other devices. And there was one company that was selling 20 of them for the same price another company was selling 10 of them. I immediately ignored the 20.
Yeah.
Immediately.
The quality
and did a
of
bunch
material.
Of research on the 10 and found that those were in fact good. And almost every one of those reviews mentioned the company that sold the 20 pack and said, do not buy these.
What often happens is during manufacturing, there'll be spot checks of quality, and if something doesn't work, they throw those away. Well, then, you know, the Tier C company, the Tier D company takes those and sells them for half price.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I used to tell my students that. They only make one model of each chip,
mm-hmm.
and they test it. And if it doesn't pass at, say, 3.2 gigahertz,
yep.
they test it at 2.8 gigahertz
mm-hmm.
and label it that way.
Yeah.
But they only test it at a certain speed until they get their quota. So you could buy a 2.8 gigahertz processor that runs perfectly well at 3.2, but it was never tested that way. And that's why some overclocks work and some do not.
Yep.
We're seeing that now in the new MacBook Pros and the M1 chip. The MacBook Air has a 7-core graphic processor. And the MacBook Pro has an 8-core graphic processor. Now, does that mean they intentionally disabled one core? Or does it mean that one of those cores failed testing?
That's exactly right.
Or it didn't
right.
get tested for that.
Or yeah. it didn't get tested.
Because it didn't need for their fulfillment of an order.
Back in the day when people had what were then thought of as smartwatches,
yeah.
calculators and, you know, everything else, there was only one company that made the chip. And they tested it.
Yep.
And how they sold it depended on what passed the test. So if the timer didn't work, you put it in a watch, it didn't have a timer. Right? So, I mean, that's just the way those things work.
Well, they were doing that for a while with hard drives, too. The yes. RLLL and the MFM drives. What they would do is they'd sit there and say, do a 500 meg hard drive. And if it didn't make, you know, didn't make it through all the tests on that, they might knock it down to, say, a 350.
Right.
Well, some folks were going back in and trying to reformat it and reprogram to get maybe 400 meg. Since it was originally, you know, maybe a 500,
right.
they knocked it down, and all of a sudden they're finding they're getting more on it because they never tested it within that range. They only went from here, oh, well, then we'll take it down to this.
The minute you get your quota of the high end, you stop testing because the test takes longer.
Yep.
You only test for the next level down.
Yep.
So yeah, there's we see that a lot. It's very common in every industry, mm-hmm. industry, and particularly in computer chips. Because in a computer chip, you know, 90% of the functions may work, and 10% don't. You can either throw it away, or label it as 90% of the other processor.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
just take it for the next one down.
It's not like an engine. Nobody's going to sell you the six of the eight cylinders work on this engine, so we'll call it a V6. It's not how that works.
Right.
But it does work that way in computer chips.
And, you know, if you want to try to take, you know, the incentive to try overclocking and see how it works, you know, it might be a win for you. That's not something we're advocating. Because don't want to be responsible if you mess up your machine.
If you do it wrong, you blow the chip and it never works again.
So you take that chance, and it's like, do you really want to? You know, I mean, if you've just shelled out, you know, say a grand for your, you know, a nice gaming system, and then, oh, well, I want to be faster, so I'm going to try overclocking. And, you know, I've seen folks out there trying to promote overclocking, and I've been asked, well, what do you think about it? And I go, if you didn't buy it for that speed, you're taking a chance. And if you want to burn that machine up, go for it.
I saw a great YouTube video where somebody took a 486 and overclocked it to 3 gigahertz.
Yep.
And played Doom on it. This is many years ago.
Liquid cooling or
he just stuck it in a freezer.
Yeah.
Stuck it in a freezer. And it played for about 3.5 minutes, and then the chip caught fire in the freezer.
Yeah.
But for 3.5 minutes, he was playing Doom at 3.2 gigahertz on a 486. And yeah, you can do that up to a certain point, but, you know, have that fire extinguisher handy and be prepared to lose your machine. It's just the way that works. All right, let me
grab another story.
Let me read a story. Hello. Go on. Okay, I'll just take the whole pile. This is a good one. Late Thursday afternoon, Mac users everywhere began complaining of a crippling slowdown when opening apps. The cause? Online certificate checks Apple performs each time a user opens an app not downloaded from the App Store. The mass upgrade to Big Sur, it seems, caused Apple servers responsible for these checks to slow to a crawl. Apple quickly fixed the slowdown, but concerns about paralyzed Macs were soon replaced by an even bigger worry, the vast amount of personal data Apple and possibly others can glean from Macs performing certificate checks each time a user opens an app that didn't come from the App Store. For people who understand what's happening behind the scenes, there was little reason to view the certificate checks as privacy grabs. Before Apple allows an app into the App Store, it must first pass a review that vets its security. Users can configure the Mac OS feature known as Gatekeeper to allow only these approved apps, or they can choose a setting that allows the installation of third-party apps as long as these apps are signed with the developer certificate issued by Apple. To make sure the certificate hasn't been revoked, Mac OS uses OCSP, short for the Industry Standard Online Certificate Status Protocol, to check its validity. Checking the validity of a certificate, any certificate, authenticating a website or piece of software sounds simple enough, but has long presented problems industry-wide that aren't easy to solve. The initial means was the use of CRL or certificate revocation lists, where you, the revoked certificates are on a list.
Which is,
says it right on
which
the,
is broken the because the list is too long.
But as the list grew, their size prevented them from working effectively. CRL gave way to OCSP, which performs the check on remote servers. OCSP, it turns out, has its own drawbacks. Servers sometimes go down, and when they do, OCSP server outages have the potential to paralyze millions of people trying to do things like visit sites, install apps, and check email. To guard against this hazard, OCSP defaults to what's called a soft fail. Rather than block the website or software that's being checked, OCSP will act as if the certificate is valid in the event that the server doesn't respond. So it'll check to see if it's valid unless there's no check available, and then it just says, go ahead, do what you want. Somehow the mass number of people upgrading to Big Sur on Thursday seems to have caused the servers at ocsp.apple.com to become overloaded. They did nothing. The server couldn't provide the all clear, but it also didn't return an error that would trigger the soft fail, and the result was a huge number of Mac users left in limbo. Apple fixed the problem, presumably by adding more server capacity, or failovers, or you know, the same way people get rid of what do you call it when you block?
Denial of service attack.
Denial of service attack. So thank you.
It was a DOS by your own customers.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was.
Oops.
The server didn't provide. Oh yeah. So it was a Apple fixed the problem, presumably by adding more server capacity. Normally that would be the end of the issue, but it wasn't. Soon, social media was awash in claims that the Mac OS app vetting process was turning Apple into a big brother that was tracking the time and location wherever users open or reopen an app not downloaded from the App Store. Paranoia strikes deep, we get it, but take off your tinfoil hat and relax. At least in this instance, the explanation is simple, and it doesn't involve Big Brother. So did you experience an application slowdown? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415, or text us at 585-205-8887.
And there's also a an extension to OCSP called stapling, so it can staple a valid certificate and say, this certificate's good for 30 days.
Right.
And so it doesn't have to check so often, which cuts down on the amount of traffic going out, too.
Helps.
Right. And every system and every operating system has a certificate store on their machine.
Yep.
So if the company uses the stapling, it will download the certificate and say, you know, this is good until January 15th, 2021 or whatever. And then it doesn't have to check until that date again. And I wish more people used that. I wish it was available more. And it's not the operating systems that don't do it. It's the apps themselves that don't do it.
One of the problems is there are so many certificate authorities. There's hundreds of them in your certificate store. And you know, the running joke was that the Hong Kong Post Office is a certificate authority. So anything they sign is trusted by all your computers. Well, I don't know if I'd like that.
Yeah, really.
So if you know, okay, if you know what you're doing, you can go through your certificate list and remove a bunch of those.
What we need is a certificate list of trusted certificate lists.
Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, so.
And every now and then, who's that certificate authority that got pulled? Their
oh, yeah, somebody did.
Like, you know, middle of last year, they were issuing too many fake certificates, and they had authorized too many sub-authorities.
Right.
Symantec had just bought them. That's what it was. And so the Symantec certificates were getting revoked because the company they bought were being naughty.
Yeah, exactly. And it's look, every company does this. Apple is not the only one. Every company does this. Apple just got hit by a massive number of people upgrading to Big Sur simultaneously, which meant that...
Because the message popped up and said so.
Right, right. Because the message popped up and said so, and we click yes because we're sheep. And people upgraded, and that meant that not only the operating system itself, but every single app on that system checked back with the server. Well, when several million people... Each who has anywhere from 20 to 40 apps, do the math for yourself. That's a lot of people hitting a server all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Should Apple have thought about that ahead of time and prepped for it? Absolutely.
Yep, you think?
But they didn't, and so there was a huge slowdown.
It's been our most successful rollout ever.
Yeah, right. And that's part of the problem. Beware of your success.
Yeah.
You know, you see the commercials where somebody gets on Wix or something and makes a one-page thing and suddenly they've got 50,000 sales and they don't know quite what to do yet. Well, that generally doesn't happen on one-page Wix servers. But the point is that, yeah, you can be a victim of your own success. If you're not prepared, there will be a problem. And the way you prepare is to think about that ahead of time. What's the worst case scenario? And in this particular case, doggone it, the problem was easily solved. Spin up more servers.
Yep.
That for somebody like Apple, that's a no-brainer. That's one click on a website. It's just one click on their console. You know, we need more OCSP servers. Click. How many do you want? 10. Done.
Yeah. Yeah. Really.
It's not like they don't have the excess capacity. Which is why they solved the problem so fast.
Yeah.
Right? But the point is, somebody should have had a thought.
It's taken the time to do it.
Ahead of time.
Well, and a similar thing happened a few years ago when they got a little overzealous and they released iOS, macOS, watchOS, an iCloud update, and something else on the same day.
Right.
And then suddenly, you know, millions of people were downloading hundreds of gigabytes each.
Yep. So which is why they stagger
They stagger
it now.
Them now, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, somebody needs to think of that ahead of time. And often enough, we get so caught up. Oh, we've got all these new cool things. Let's just throw them out there and overwhelm everybody. It'll be great. They'll all think we're amazing. They'll download them. It'll be fun. And nobody thought, wait, they'll all download them?
Yeah.
At once?
The congestion?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I get it. But you got to think ahead of these things.
Because
what these people are paid for. Do your job.
They got to put a little more forethought into it and not, you know, see, they're blinded by the dollar signs because that's what they're thinking. You know, we get it out there, we get all this out there, and yeah, poor, you know, people are downloading it like crazy and everything else, and it also creates quite a few issues.
Right. And Archandra called it binning. There's another phrase that I can't remember that I used to use every week in class, but I don't remember. But yeah, Symantec.
Yeah, it was so Symantec had bought somebody that had gotten bad, and then so Symantec's certificates were all revoked, and they had to sell their certificate business to DigiCert.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of, I guess it was funny to us, but
yeah,
maybe not to anybody else. All right, that music tells us we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I particularly want to thank all of you called in or texted in. Very, very appreciative. Please, everybody, vote in the poll. Let's see how big we can get that number in the and we'll see you next week. Listen, when you're using your computer, think. Don't just click. Think before you press a button. 90% of your problems will go away. Read what the screen says and think before you click. All right, we're like I said, we're done for another week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We'll see you in 166 hours.